To complainers everywhere, turn up the volume. Introduction. Americans are a positive people. This is our reputation as well as our self-image. We smile a lot and are often baffled when people from other cultures do not return the favor. In the well-worn stereotype, we are upbeat, cheerful, optimistic, and shallow, while foreigners are likely to be subtle, world-weary, and possibly decadent. American expatriate writers like Henry James and James Baldwin wrestled with and occasionally reinforced this stereotype, which I once encountered in the 1980s in the form of a remark by Soviet émigré poet Joseph Brodsky to the effect that the problems with Americans is that they have never known suffering. Apparently, he didn't know who had invented the blues. Whether we Americans see it as an embarrassment or a point of pride, being positive, in affect, in mood, in outlook, seems to be ingrained in our national character. Who would be churlish or disaffected enough to challenge these happy features of the American personality? Take the business of positive affect, which refers to the mood we display to others through our smiles, our greetings, our professions of confidence and optimism. Scientists have found that the mere act of smiling can generate positive feelings within us, at least if the smile is not forced. In addition, good feelings, as expressed through our words and smiles, seem to be contagious. Smile and the world smiles with you. Surely the world would be a better, happier place if we all greeted one another warmly and stopped to coax smiles from babies, if only through the well-known social, psychological mechanism of mood contagion. Recent studies show that happy feelings flit easily through social networks, so that one person's good fortune can brighten the day, even for only distantly connected others. Furthermore, psychologists today agree that positive feelings like gratitude, contentment, and self-confidence can actually lengthen our lives and improve our health. Some of these claims are exaggerated, as we shall see. Though positive feelings hardly need to be justified, like exercise or vitamin supplements, as part of a healthy lifestyle. People who report having positive feelings are more likely to participate in a rich social life, and vice versa. And social connectedness turns out to be an important defense against depression, which is a known risk factor for many physical illnesses. At the risk of redundancy or even tautology, we can say that on many levels, individual and social, it is good to be positive, certainly better than being withdrawn, aggrieved, or chronically sad. So I take it as a sign of progress that in just the last decade or so, economists have begun to show an interest in using happiness rather than just the gross national product, as a measure of an economy's success. Happiness is, of course, a slippery thing to measure or define. Philosophers have debated what it is for centuries, and even if we were to define it simply as a greater frequency of positive feelings than negative ones, when we ask people if they are happy, we are asking them to arrive at some sort of average over many moods and moments. Maybe I was upset earlier in the day, but then was cheered up by a bit of good news. So what am I really? In one well-known psychological experiment, subjects were asked to answer a questionnaire on life satisfaction, but only after they had performed the apparently irrelevant task of photocopying a sheet of paper for the experimenter. For a randomly chosen half of the subjects, a dime had been left for them to find on the copy machine. As two economists summarize the results, reported satisfaction with life was raised substantially by the discovery of the coin on the copy machine, clearly not an income effect. In addition to the problems of measurement, there are cultural differences in how happiness is regarded and whether it is even seen as a virtue. Some cultures, like our own, value the positive affect that seems to signal internal happiness. Others are more impressed by seriousness, self-sacrifice, or a quiet willingness to cooperate. However hard to pin down, though, happiness is somehow a more pertinent metric for well-being, from a humanistic perspective, than the buzz of transactions that constitute the GDP. Surprisingly, when psychologists undertake to measure the relative happiness of nations, they routinely find that Americans are not, even in prosperous times and despite our vaunted positivity, very happy at all. A recent meta-analysis of over 100 studies of self-reported happiness worldwide found Americans ranking only 23rd, surpassed by the Dutch, the Danes, the Malaysians, the Bahamians, the Austrians, and even the supposedly dour Finns. In another potential sign of relative distress, Americans account for 2/3 of the global market for antidepressants, which happen also to be the most commonly prescribed drugs in the United States. To my knowledge, no one knows how antidepressant use affects people's responses to happiness surveys. Do respondents report being happy because the drugs make them feel happy? Or do they report being unhappy because they know they are dependent on drugs to make them feel that way? Without our heavy use of antidepressants, Americans would likely rank far lower in the happiness rankings than we currently do. When economists attempt to rank nations more objectively in terms of well-being, taking into account such factors as health, environmental sustainability, and the possibility of upward mobility, the United States does even more poorly than it does when only the subjective state of happiness is measured. The Happy Planet Index, to give just one example, locates us at 150th among the world's nations.